In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Well, the world officially turned upside down this week. Just when you thought the election couldn't get any crazier, you have the FBI reopening the case against Hillary and her emails, the polls are trending towards Trump, the actual document that formed the backbone of the Clinton corruption company coming out through WikiLeaks, and tons more. Although the world officially turned upside down for me when it turns out that Michael Moore and I actually agree on something. Yes, that Michael Moore. He has a 4-minute video out where he actually endorses Donald Trump. The key takeaway is that Trump is reaching out to the middle class, which has seen their jobs and their homes disappear. And Hillary is part of the corrupt system, which is protecting itself. You will never fix it with her in office. After I got over my astonishment, I thought, but isn't this really what America is all about? Why are we fighting all the time? Isn't America about bringing people together rather than what Obama has done these last 8 years, dividing us on race, on religion, on political beliefs, and then using the power of federal agencies to enforce his ideology? We heard it last week about the federal agencies trying to take farmers' lands in the Klamath to enforce a UN environmental treaty, one that we haven't even ratified. And this dividing of America will continue under Hillary. Basket of deplorables, irredeemables, coal people, Catholics. It's one giant laundry list of enemies and people she hates. That's not America. As Trump says, just imagine what our country could accomplish if we started working together as one people under one God saluting one flag. That's what built us into the greatest nation on earth. It's not diversity that makes us strong, it's unity. Keep that in mind during today's show. Coming up, we'll be talking with best-selling author Scott McEwen to talk about some international issues, WikiLeaks, and more. But first up, I'd like to welcome William Geen. He is president and spokesman of ALIPAC, that's Americans for Legal Immigration Political Action Committee. Their website is simply alipac.us if you'd like to go visit them. William, it's good to talk to you.
Great to be back.
Yeah, so we've got this situation. There's a lot of information out there about potential voting fraud, everything from 24 million registered voters who should not be on the rolls, whether they're dead, they've moved, they're felons, etc. And then we also have these voting machines flipping votes. Have you received any reports specifically of illegal immigrants actually casting votes?
Oh, yeah. We've had reports of illegal immigrants voting in elections since 2010 and probably before that, then we got involved. But since 2010, we've been warning Americans about, illegal immigrants voting in large numbers, especially in states west of the Mississippi, like Nevada, California, Washington. And we were very happy to see the Donald Trump campaign pick up our issue just a couple weeks ago and start warning people about illegal immigrant voters. Right now, the Democrats know that if they're going to beat Donald Trump, they have to engage in voter fraud. The intensity, the energy is on Trump's side. The Republicans that are holding out from the Never Trumps that are bitter about the primary are going to all coalesce, or mostly coalesce, to Trump in the final days and hours of the election. And so they've got to resort to voting deceased people, multiple voting tactics, felons voting, and illegal immigrants voting. Unfortunately, what most people in America don't realize is that most states have no defenses whatsoever against illegal immigrants voting. Mm. When you pick up a voter registration form at the DMV or a Board of Elections, or an activist hands you one that's working for the Democratic Party or SEIU, and somebody checks that little box, are you a U.S. citizen? Yes. No one checks that. Hmm. The person registering doesn't check that. The county board doesn't check that. The state board doesn't check that. And, of course, nobody on the federal level, especially under Obama, is going to check that. So illegal immigrants, although it is a felony for them to register to vote, and a second felony punishable like 6 to 9 years if the charge were to be placed, to vote again. So it's a dual felony, two of them, for illegal immigrants to register and vote, but they're doing it in large numbers because that's just another one of America's defenses that are not being, taken care of or enacted because of, this plot to overthrow our republic by bringing all these people in here to vote against Americans like me.
Well, the Democrats say that there's there are probably some people in the rolls that shouldn't be and so on, but they're willing to tolerate that because they want to ensure that everybody has a right to vote and to do things like what you say is to actually find out whether or not people are citizens or felons or whatever. They don't want to. They see that as suppressing the vote because maybe some people don't have IDs, which seems rather ridiculous. But
it does suppress the vote in a way. It does. It's supposed to suppress the vote because felons aren't supposed to vote. Dead people aren't supposed to vote, and illegal aliens aren't supposed to vote. And when someone comes here from another country into our country and votes and steals a vote of a U.S. citizen by doing so, it's a felony. The Democrats are the party of criminality. They're the party of crime. And to prove it, if you go around the United States and you find any town or city and you find the highest crime area that you can find, the place that if you or your children were standing, that you would be in the greatest danger of someone stealing your property or violently, sexually, or murderously assaulting you, okay? When you're standing in those positions, you're standing in the core political strongholds of Democrats. There's a one-to-one relationship between criminal conduct and Democrat voting behavior. So, of course, they don't want, in Virginia and other places, they don't want people's criminal records to stop them from voting. And they use the same argument. The truth of the matter is they support voter fraud. They support criminality because that's how Democrats win elections.
So there, you think that there are enough illegal, whether it's immigrants or felons or whatnot, you think that there are enough of those illegal votes happening that there's enough to flip elections?
I think there are, at a minimum, hundreds of thousands of illegals voting. And one of the biggest examples was in 2010, Harry Reid. Sharon Angle was running against a Tea Party-backed candidate, was running against Harry Reid in Nevada for U.S. Senate. And she was doing very strongly because Harry Reid went into the race with only a 9% approval. His approval ratings were in the single digits entering the race. Yet on election day, every single county in Nevada went for Sharon Angle, except for one, Clark County, Las Vegas, the largest, heaviest hitting county in the state, where illegal immigrants were brought out of the casinos and the restaurants and the hotels by the SCIU and factions of their unions, their sub-faction labor unions for like the restaurant workers and everything. They brought them out and they voted them. They voted all the illegal immigrants to save Harry Reid. Harry Reid's presence in the United States Senate since 2010, in our opinion, has been completely illegitimate. And everything he's voted on has been illegitimate because the race was stolen in Nevada by illegal immigrants. And the reason we know this is because there have been reports by, like, in the newspaper of people that documented illegal aliens voting. Responding to that, ALIPAC, our organization, we filed a formal written complaint sent to the Clark County Board of Elections and the Federal Elections Commission, both of which are required by law to look into any official complaint. They didn't. They didn't even write us back.
Wow.
Okay. Now, and this is we were citing newspaper articles from like the Las Vegas Sun Journal, whatever it is, where these people are reporting that illegal immigrants are voting. On top of that, we had leaked emails that came down from some of the big casino owners that were ordering their middle managers. They were saying, "We have our list of employees, and we have the list of the voter files. We know who's voted, not the voter files, but they had lists of who had voted already in the early voting of the 2010 elections, and then they had lists of their employees, and they sent these emails threatening their middle managers with being fired if they didn't turn everybody out to vote. And those people they were turning out to vote were illegal aliens. This is Grand Theft Nation. These people are willing to take this country over by any means, crook, steal, borrow.
Wow, that is amazing. All right, everyone stay with us. We will have more with William Gein of ALIPAC. That's Americans for Legal Immigration. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to William Gein. He is the president and spokesman of ALIPAC. That's Americans for Legal Immigration. And, William, going into the break there, you were really saying some astonishing stuff where clear evidence of voter fraud happening there in Nevada and Harry Reid's home state there. And I'm sitting there listening to this, and I'm thinking, why is nothing ever done?
Because the system, like Donald Trump said, is rigged. The system is rigged. We send these things. We send notice out to all the press in the country, the media in the country. Hey, look, everyone, here's a newspaper article on the local area, and here's our official complaint to the FEC and the Clark County Board of Elections. Illegal aliens voting, the Democrats at the newspapers and the TV stations pick it up and say, oh, well, they're voting Democrats, so we're just not going to tell anybody about that. And that is the root that goes even further to how right now, for many years, they don't report crimes by illegal immigrants. Illegal immigrants not only have been able to just come into the country, but they've been able to rape and pillage and assault and kill people. And the major liberal papers, New York Times, L.A. Times, CNN, even Fox News most of the time, will not report about illegal immigrants killing. Now, Fox News has reported some of those, but they're the only ones, really, that have done any of that. And that even now, Trump supporters are now being attacked all across the country by Hillary Clinton supporters.
Oh, yeah.
They're violently attacking Trump supporters. I just read through a Washington Times article yesterday that listed, like, a huge amount of these attacks that have been documented. Most newspapers, most television stations in the country are not reporting this because they cover up the crimes of Democrats. They cover up the crimes of illegal immigrants. They cover up crimes in the minority neighborhoods, and they cover up crimes about people attacking Donald Trump supporters because they're okay with it. They're part of it. Mm-hmm. Right now, the Donald Trump campaign has tapped into what has become a populist, nationalist-flavored revolt against a one-party system, and that one-party system involves all the Democrats, sellout Republicans like John McCain and Paul Ryan, and most of your major media in the country, as well as major corporations like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Silicon Valley, Facebook, and Google. They're all part of the same beast. They're all part of the same single-party, corporate, governmental-fused system. Okay, and that system says they don't like Christians, they don't like conservatives, they don't like the Republican base, they don't like what America's been for the last 200 years, so to overthrow the Republic, let's bring in people from all across the globe that have an alien outlook and an alien experience, if not an antagonistic or antithetical viewpoint than Americans, and bring them in and pour them on Americans' heads until they can't win elections anymore, and we may already be there. The thing that gets the leftist Soros group so upset with me is the warning that I issue that right now Donald Trump could win this election by 55 to 65% of the American vote, the American citizen vote, and still lose because they've pumped so many illegal immigrants and Muslim refugees in here that are going to be voting, it may already be too late. If it's not too late, but we just don't get Donald Trump elected, okay? In 4 years, the Democrats will make sure that no one, not even a 70-year-old, very skilled, media-savvy, $10 billion candidate like Trump can ever do anything like this again. Okay, so if anybody's out there saying, well, I just don't like Donald Trump, and I like Ted Cruz, and I don't like what he said about grabbing women's private parts, and blah, 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 none of that matters at all. Compared to the fact that they're going to pour so many people in here that the traditional American citizenry, most like the people that have run this country and paid the price of blood, sweat, taxes, and tears to protect this country with their children's lives, that we're all going to be permanently demographically submerged forevermore. And if we're not already over the line, because we may be, you may be looking at your screens on election night and Donald Trump lost, and it may be because of the amount of people that they pumped in here illegally that have already voted and stolen the elections like they do in California and Nevada. But if he wins, we got a chance, a thin chance, of turning things around. Everything's not going to – and people need to be very careful, very, very careful about Trump winning. I'll be happy. A lot of people will be happy. That's great. But if you think this rainbow is going to pop up with unicorns prancing around on the clouds and that everything in this country is going to be better, no. We have a very narrow margin of possibly getting Donald Trump elected here in 12 days. We have a very narrow margin, if he gets elected, of turning things around in this country. But the invasion force they've brought in here and all these people, they're not going to go quietly. And one of the things I will tell you, they're trying to float a lot of articles claiming that Donald Trump supporters are dangerous. Donald Trump supporters might try to start a civil war if Donald Trump doesn't win. Let me tell you where the danger is. The danger is the people who have been burning places like Charlotte, North Carolina, and my home state, and Ferguson, Missouri, they're the ones that are not going to accept Donald Trump's victory. If Donald Trump wins by a narrow margin or a strong margin,
oh, yeah.
I hope to be wrong about this, but I believe there will be more fires and smoke going up from more towns and cities since any time since April of 1968 when Martin Luther King was assassinated. And that's the real security threat. It's not God-fearing, law-abiding, tax-paying, legal gun-owning Donald Trump supporters. It's these people that are already shooting at our police. That the people who are already responsible for the massive Ferguson effect crime spike of violent crime in every town and city with a significant minority population in the country, those are the people who are being agitated to a revolutionary state.
Yes.
These articles that you're seeing blaming Trump supporters or saying that Trump supporters are going to do something is part of the defamation, the blood libel that's being told to these minority subgroups of the Democratic Party to stir them to violence. They're already stirred to violence, and all of that is probably going to pop on election night if Donald Trump wins. If Donald Trump loses, they will then take that energy from these communities that they're riling up to and beating the war drums to violence. They will then use those communities to terrorize the conservatives and persecute us and
yes.
to try to do
yes.
full gun confiscation.
And welcome to Nazi Germany at that point. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. More with William Keane of Alec. And welcome back. We're continuing our discussion with William Guillen of AllyPAC, America's foremost political action committee fighting against illegal immigration. You can give them a visit at AllyPAC.us. That's AllyPAC.us. William, you've got a national movement going on right now in cities all across the United States. Why don't you go ahead and talk to us about that?
Well, we are the only political action committee that's fighting against illegal immigration and amnesty, and we've got a three-pronged battle plan for the next 12 days running up to November 8th election. First of all, we want everybody out there to go to Trump's website, DonaldJTrump.com, and sign up as a volunteer. Get involved locally, making calls to voters. Vote early. There probably will be disturbances and fraud and violence on Election Day at the polls, and you either want to stay away from that or be there as a type of monitor with your cell phone and your camcorder and your flags and your pro-Trump signs, legally sort of observing what happens instead of having to vote yourself. So vote early. Get every like-minded American you can to vote early. And don't stop until the polls close on Election Day. You got to register. You got to make sure that you're volunteering with the Trump campaign, and then you can look on Facebook or search online for National Wave of Protests Against Hillary Clinton. That's National Wave of Protest Against Hillary Clinton. We launched those yesterday with about 14 people here on an overpass in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I tell you, this is a swing state, and North Carolina is a must-have state for Donald Trump. We are going to deliver. I'm going to do everything in my power to deliver North Carolina to Donald Trump's campaign. And you should have seen it. We had our flags out there, our Pence Trump signs. We had some other signs about the government being corrupt and stuff like that. And thousands of people saw us driving over the overpass and under the overpass. And so many trucks and cars were honking and giving us thumbs up and waving at us and yelling, "Go Trump." The energy was palpable. This is not just a campaign. This is a political revolt that's going on, and everyone needs to understand that and participate and help it in any way you can. So we want people to go and protest at intersections and overpasses across the country. You can contact me at AllyPAC, William G. at AllyPAC.us, or contact the Overpasses for America Facebook page. And you can put an intersection or an overpass near you that you and a couple of friends are going to go to at a certain time and place between now and the election, and we'll put it on the national event list, which is now up to 35 events around the country in the first 24 hours. We're hoping that will grow into the hundreds. And then, you know, we send other people to come and join you on these overpasses, showing your support for Donald Trump, showing your opposition to Hillary Clinton. Then on Election Day, November 8th, take your flags, take your people, take your cameras, take your signs, and go to the polling precincts and be there as much as you can. The Democrats, they're going to have the thugs from SEIU out there, Black Lives Matter, the La Raza illegal alien groups, the new Black Panthers, the old Black Panthers. They're going to be at many precincts and polls across the country. We've got to put American citizens at those polls. And if you can do that through the Trump campaign, do it. If you have to do it on your own, do it organically. But protest against Hillary Clinton. The other thing we're asking people to do is, if you're in Arizona, vote for anybody but McCain. I mean, I know some people don't want to lose the Senate to Republicans, but we gave the Senate to Republicans, and they passed amnesty for illegal immigrants. As part of a national battle strategy, we're asking for voters in Arizona and Paul Ryan's 1st Congressional District of Wisconsin to vote for anybody but Ryan and McCain. Never Ryan McCain. Anybody but Ryan McCain. Write in one of the primary challengers that you like Kelly Ward or Paul Nealon. Write in Mickey Mouse. vote for a third party, vote for the Democrat, elect a Democrat in those two seats. We may lose the Senate. We're not going to lose the House. But you know what? It doesn't matter. If the Democrats take the Senate, it's better that that happen and Trump win the presidency with the veto power than for John McCain and Paul Ryan to do what they intend to do, which is they're trying to throw this race to Hillary Clinton right now, and then they're going to try to help Hillary Clinton pass amnesty in the first 100 days. We know that's their battle plan. Anybody that wants to look into it can see
but that's,
that.
But that's if Hillary gets elected. What I would much rather see happen is Trump win by a landslide, which forces McCain and which forces Ryan to come around to his way of thinking, because they will essentially have to admit defeat. I'd much rather see them humbled and come around to the proper side, which is on Trump's side.
Well, that's never going to happen, because we've never seen, in my 12 years doing this, we've never seen anybody that supports amnesty for illegal immigrants ever truly come around to the other side. We've seen them say that they've changed, which McCain has done several times to win re-election, and then gone up to D.C. and stabbed everybody in the back. There's only one thing you can do with somebody that's treasonous enough to be a Republican saying that they serve the people of the United States, that's willing to sink the people of the United States with amnesty like McCain on the Gang of Eight. That's to politically destroy them and throw them into the trash heap of history. And Donald Trump, if Donald Trump wins and McCain and Ryan win, what they're going to do is they're going to use everything in their power as high-ranking senior members of the GOP establishment to persuade and force and finagle and try to twist Trump's arm into amnesty for illegal immigrants. Freshman Democrats in those seats, a freshman Democratic senator from Arizona and a freshman Democrat from Wisconsin will have no power in the House and Senate and no influence whatsoever over Donald Trump's campaign or what the Congress and Senate does.
Well,
so our strategy is sound, and while it is repugnant for me or anybody else to push a button or advocate that somebody elect a socialist Democrat anywhere as part of the national strategy to save the United States from destruction by the illegal immigrant force brought here to overthrow us all, we have made the very painful but very strong, strategic, and thought-out decision to ask the people of Arizona and Wisconsin to reject Paul Ryan, John McCain, elect the Democrat, and decapitate the leadership, politically decapitate the leadership on amnesty in the House and the Senate. If people will do this for us, we can then go to D.C. and go to all these other Republicans that are serving the Chamber of Commerce and serving George Soros' amnesty agenda and say, did you see what just happened to John McCain? Did you see what just happened to Paul Ryan? Next election, you're the two picks. You're the two picks that Republicans are going to turn on. Because, see, here's the thing. The biggest power is with the swing voters. The independent and the swing voters have the greatest influence over lawmakers and policies and elections and campaigns and anybody else. Well, yeah. You can't have that power unless you're willing to be a swing voter. So we are asking people, if somebody don't like the strategy, support our other stuff. Support our fight against illegal immigration. Support Donald Trump. Support our protest against Hillary Clinton. But we have a lot of support and a lot of Republicans that are going to vote for anyone but McCain and Ryan.
Well, it is certainly a corrupt system, and that's why I really hope that Trump wins in a landslide, because it may force people like Ryan and McCain to come around his way of thinking. And on a good note, I just saw today that Ryan may not get the speakership if things work out. So, William Gein, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Hey, thank you. Hope to hear your podcast of this and share it with a lot of people.
All right, that would be great. And coming up next, we'll be talking with author Scott McEwen about what in the world is going on with Russia and China, WikiLeaks, and his new book. I'd like to welcome Scott McEwen back to the show. Scott grew up in Eastern Oregon, a small-town kid. He is now internationally famous as the co-author of American Sniper, The Story of Chris Kyle, which has since been made into an award-winning film. Scott has continued that streak with his own work with the national best-selling Sniper Elite series, and his most recent book is part of that Sniper Elite series, Ghost Sniper. That was released back in July 2016, and then in November, he's got American Commander, will be hitting bookstores. Scott, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you as well, Mark.
So your Sniper Elite series really focused on a lot of international issues, and Russia certainly figured very heavily into that, and right now we've got Russia making some moves here, and China, of course, is making their own moves in the South Pacific. Unfortunately, though, the American media is really consumed with the election coverage. And just recently on Facebook, you posted a BBC article that reports Spain's approval to refuel Russian warships on their way to Syria. NATO had put some pressure on Spain not to do that. They were concerned about the Russian bombing of Aleppo. Spain and Russia have since both backed off of that refueling agreement. But what I found very concerning in there is this discussion on the buildup of Russian warships off the coast of Syria. 12 cruisers were spotted, including their nuclear-powered ship. But then there are guesses that there are additional submarines that have escorted the warships down there, and so they could actually be parked off the Syrian coast and are not visible at all. So what potential risks are we facing with Russia's buildup there in the Middle East?
I think the risk is simple, Mark, and I think the first is that the Soviet bear, if you will, from the old times before Russia came back and the Soviet Union fell, is really coming back to the fore. Very aggressive foreign policy. Putin has major problems at home, has major issues economically. The cost of oil, or should say the price of oil, has gone through the floor, which is their biggest export commodity. And as a result, he's trying to flex his muscle in places such as Syria and other places in the world to give Russian people, or I should say the Russian government, more influence in places such as Syria. And we've seen this with them now sorting their fleet, but their northern fleet, to the Syrian port. And they're now, in Syria and actively supporting the Syrian leader there, Assad, who we oppose in the United States pretty publicly. However, we both have a mutual, if you will, foe in ISIS. So what you've got is you've got two superpowers, Russia and the United States, essentially fighting or allegedly fighting the same foe in ISIS, but you've got disagreements over multiple areas, such as Aleppo, such as, things of that nature on how they're going to be run and who's going to be in charge there. Clearly, the Syrian government wants to be in charge of their own country. Arguably, they should be. And the United States and the Obama administration has actively attempted to overthrow them, including the running of guns from the from the ports during the Libyan crisis. We know that they were running guns down there for that to try and overthrow the government in Syria. So you've got this clashing of the two superpowers in a very dangerous situation, in my estimation. I think the biggest danger is a misunderstanding or a shoot down of one or the other's planes or ships, leading to a more full-on confrontation between the Russia and the United States, which obviously is not a good proposition whatsoever.
Well, you mentioned a couple things there that I find really interesting. Number one is that ostensibly we're fighting the Syrian government there, and I think you're right, is that they do have whether we like that government or not, that's their government, and the people there need to deal with it. And ostensibly, we're fighting both Russia and the U.S. are fighting ISIS. I'm not sure that we necessarily are fighting ISIS very much because we don't seem to be making any progress there. And in some ways, it's almost like the whole situation has flipped from the Reagan era, where the Russians were clearly the bad guys and we were the good guys, and we supported other good guys all around the world. And now it's almost like Russia is actually making some better decisions, internationally speaking, than what we are. I mean, at least in terms of how they're going after ISIS versus what we're doing. You grew up in the Reagan era. Did you ever expect to see a time when Russia was fighting the bad guys and we seemed to be helping the bad guys?
I think the whole world has turned on its head, and this is just another example of what I consider to be completely ill-thought-out, long-range tactical planning by this administration. They started with this concept of, quote, Arab Spring. And Arab Spring has come back and clearly blown up in their face. We have nothing but despotic chaos in multiple countries where they, quote, tried the Arab Spring. And here's another example in Syria and this area of Syria where they've essentially tried to destabilize a government, and which is exactly what they did with Assad. Mm-hmm. And they've created the largest human exodus that we have seen, even larger potentially than World War II, in the number of refugees that have been created as a result of what I consider to be the bad planning of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And historically, when we're going to look back at this time and figure out what happened, why they displaced, why we have 2 million refugees currently on the doorstep inside Europe, destabilizing Europe in my estimation, we're going to lay it squarely at the feet of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and the decisions they made in destabilizing certain portions of the Middle East, which led to this huge refugee disaster that we're seeing right now.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about China, but I think we're going to hold off on that until the next segment. So everyone stay with us. We'll have lots more with Scott McEwen. His latest book is Ghost Sniper, and then his book coming up in the end of November, just in time for Christmas, is American Commander. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show, helping you keep an eye on big government. Today we're talking with author Scott McEwen. He is the co-author of American Sniper, the story of Chris Kyle, made into an award-winning film of the same name. And Scott, we were going to talk about China in that last segment there, and there are, you know, we were talking during the break, actually, about how upside down the world has become. And I absolutely agree with you. I mean, it's completely upside down. Russia seems to be making better decisions than we are. And now we've got China, and it was just announced this last week that Philippines has broken ties with us. I mean, how many allies have we managed to push away from us during the Obama administration?
Yeah, it's stunning. It's truly stunning. I would say that, you know, the gains that the United States made in the free world, and I consider us to be the light, and I don't make any bones about it, that I consider us to be, you know, a light in many times in very dark areas of the world. And we make mistakes, but by and large, we do things for other people and to help people. And, you know, and I think that the gains that we made in the free world for the last 40 years have been turned backwards effectively by this administration in 7 years to an extent that, I mean, historically, once again, when we look back at this time, people are just going to shake their head and say, my God, what did we let this guy do? I mean, China is a perfect example. You know, we're losing the Philippines, or ostensibly we're going to lose the Philippines if we don't watch what we're doing. The Philippines is dealing with China directly, and that once again is going to turn the clock back to influences that predate World War, you know, World War II. And, you know, and what happened with the Japanese, when the Japanese took the Philippines and we had to take it back. And I shudder at the thought of if we were engaged in another worldwide conflict, where we would be able to go for a friendly port to be able to put in, replenish our ships, our planes, our military, and then go back out to sea to fight. Because I'm telling you right now, we're losing on just about every front as a result of the foreign policy of this administration.
Well, you know, a lot of people were suspecting that Obama's goal coming into the office was to weaken the United States. He certainly started his grand apology tour all around the world, apologizing for America's ills. And a lot of people looked at that here in America with a little bit of disdain, actually a lot of disdain. And we are seeing the fruits of 8 years of Obama. Like you mentioned, the Philippines have now, I'm pretty sure that they have actually broken ties with us and said that they're siding with China now, at least according to their president. I don't know if there's a whole legal aspect to that, that they have to get a treaty or something like that. But anyway, China is increasing their military size. They've got those bases down in the South Pacific, of which we have done absolutely nothing about. And now, if I remember right, India is also saying that they are considering breaking ties with us. I mean, can a Trump presidency turn this around, do you think?
I think it can. And I think it can for the reason that the United States, if we got a lot of these restrictions off of our government, from our government on our private industry, if we actually retooled and remade the United States the economic power that it always was and should be, and made ourselves independent energy-wise, which we could in a heartbeat right now with all the resources that we've seen from fracking, et cetera, I think the United States could retake its role and rightful role as a leader of the free world. And I think that the rest of the Western world is really looking for us to do it and is now realizing the results of, you know, 7 years of indecision, stupidity, Kerry foreign policy, you know, Hillary Clinton foreign policy, and an absolute lack of leadership from the United States, and the result is just complete chaos.
Yes, and not only are they looking for us to retake that role, we're the only ones that can. You look at what's going on there in Europe. England has weakened itself. France has weakened itself. Any number of former allies, none of them can take the role that the United States not only needs to, not only can take, but needs to retake.
Absolutely. There's no one out there that really can do militarily, diplomatically, economically what the United States can do. And, you know, and I've said it before on your show, and unfortunately, given the fact that I have very many very close ties, particularly, you know, in Great Britain, Northern Ireland, and in Ireland. You know, I feel bad to say it, but I think within 5 years you're going to see the EU collapse completely. Hmm.
Oh, yes. I absolutely agree with that. I mean, we've got the famous Brexit that happened earlier this year. I think others are going to be fleeing there as well. Certainly, you look at what is happening in Germany and the influx of immigrants there. I mean, they are turning German society on its head. And same thing with Sweden. Sweden is another one that has just opened its doors to these immigrants. They've got these well-meaning people that think we can just let all these people in. And suddenly they're realizing, you know, you can't do that because they have no intention of becoming Swedes.
Yes, as I was recently talking to a friend of mine in Stockholm, and she told me that the city has roaming mobs of basically immigrants of Islamic backgrounds from this Middle Eastern situation where they let all these, quote, refugees in, that are burning cars, creating havoc, rioting, and raping women at will in the streets of Stockholm. And this is a common event that the European news is not reporting in any way, shape, or form.
No, unfortunately, it is not. And, you know, the WikiLeaks have been all over the news right now. We now have emails that provided proof that people may not have had to die the night of the Benghazi attack. They have also proven the very cozy relationship between the DOJ and the Clinton campaigns and their allies. Does any of this surprise you?
Well, I mean, we have to be surprised to see the level of outright what appears to be corruption going on right now with the FBI and the DOJ. I'm appalled to see such a respected group of law enforcement people that we had in the FBI particularly, that they could be so influenced and so, I believe, negatively influenced to not recommend investigations, to do shoddy investigations as we've seen with the email scandal, etc. And it's just astounding to me to see the downfall of such a great organization for political purposes that we see now with the Clintons. It's absolutely astonishing.
It is astonishing, and it's kind of like, you know, you've always suspected it, but there it is in black and white. Okay, everyone stay with us. Lots more of Scott McKeown coming up. We'll be talking about his new book. And we're back. We're in our final segment now with author Scott McKeown. He's the co-author, along with Chris Kyle, of the number one best-selling book, American Sniper. He's got his most recent book is in the Sniper Elite series, Ghost Sniper, that came out in July. Hint, hint for Christmas. It's coming up quick. And also, he has a new book coming out right in time for Christmas, American Commander. And, you know, the last time that you and I talked, it seemed like there was a potential problem brewing with the release of your newest book here, American Commander. Can you talk to us at all about that?
Yeah, as I did with American Sniper and any book that is first person based upon the lives of our troops, I submit to the Department of Defense, which is required under statutory rules. And as we've seen recently, if you don't do it with Matt Bissonnette and the No Easy Day book, they took the entirety of the proceeds from that book from that, unfortunately, and just kept them, that being the government. And we submitted American Commander per statute, and the delay was, I believe, unreasonable by the DOD. But beyond that, the DOD has made some decisions, you know, in redacting certain terms. And I'll be frank with you, I'm not specifying where in the book it was redacted or anything else, but part of the terms that were redacted were the term SEAL Team 6. Hmm. Now, I feel that's really unreasonable. I don't think that that's a classified term. And a term becomes declassified when it's so used in public parlance that it no longer receives a classified, if you will, designation from the government. And I believe after what we've seen from this administration, particularly from Obama and from Biden after the dispatching of Osama bin Laden and naming SEAL Team 6 directly 2 days after the operation, you know, the term SEAL Team 6, which, I mean, let's face it, Disney tried to trademark the term. They tried to take the term SEAL Team 6 and trademark it for their own purposes.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's very much a open term in public use. I mean, Ryan Zinke has been very clear that he used to be a commander at SEAL Team 6. The ex-admiral of the Navy, one of the admirals at SOCOM, have put it on the resume that they were a commander at SEAL Team 6. So, I mean, it's absurd for me to see the DOD continue with their contention, if you will, that this is a classified term. I mean, I talk about it publicly. I'm not going to refer in the book because they've instructed us not to. What parts of the book are referenced directly to, quote, SEAL Team 6. But beyond that, you know, the book is great. We're done. It's out there. It didn't affect the substance of the book because I think that people will understand the references that are in there. You know, the foreword in the book is by Robert O'Neill, which I was very pleased to see that he did the foreword for the book because he is the guy that killed Bin Laden. And by the way, he was with SEAL Team 6.
Hmm. Well, you know, I used to be in the publishing business for 20-some years, and it always surprises people to hear that, yes, there is, in fact, censorship that happens inside the publishing industry. In fact, one of the authors that I worked with years and years ago, he was a member of the CIA, and he confided this to me. I didn't know that, you know, at the time it was a secret that he was a part of the CIA, and this was back in the days before a lot of people had email. And I wrote a letter to him saying, well, it would really help me to know if there are elements within this book that you've written that are, you know, how much of it is real and how much of it is made up, basically. And lo and behold, that accidentally led me into being exposed as a CIA agent. His wife had no idea that he was a CIA agent and had been for 20-some years. And but anyway, he himself had to go to the CIA to get clearance on this sort of thing. And you know, you can understand if this is a top secret thing, but this was actually about how the Cold War ended. And the response by the CIA was, well, you should be asking for forgiveness, not for permission. So this kind of thing happens.
Well, exactly. You know, and the other thing I want to say is this: look, I'm the first one. That there's no way, let alone Commander Zinke, there's no way that we would compromise active duty tactics, procedures, anything else in reference to anything that's in the book, and nor did we, in American Commander. And nor would we ever even get close to doing that, and nor did I do it in American Sniper, any other thing that I'm involved in. I understand that the importance, if it's in fact something that's current and that sure. You have to worry about. But if you want to juxtapose the using of the term SEAL Team 6 with what just took place with Hillary Clinton and what she exposed
yes.
for active duty undercover agents in very, very dangerous parts of the world, some of whom I've heard directly were killed as a result of
That's
her
right.
email scandals and the disclosures. If you can juxtapose the two positions and we are complying, yet she has been caught doing what she's done, then I'm telling you, this country is in a very dangerous position because we are creating two sets of rules for two different groups of people,
yes.
And that is not what the United States is about.
That's exactly right. So we only got about a minute here with you. Real quick, why don't you kind of sum up what the book is about and what people will learn?
American Commander is about the man that trained Chris Kyle, Marcus Luttrell, many other people that you've seen, the guys that killed the pirates and Captain Phillips, the guys that ended up killing Bin Laden. He is the guy that made the decisions on who became the SEALs. That became the guys not only in the regular SEALs, you know, he was the guy in charge of BUDS in Coronado, but the guys that went from there to a special part of the SEALs called SEAL Team 6. And, you know, it's really fascinating for me to see the mentality of the guy that wanted the mentality of the men that were going to do the toughest jobs for the United States. And this is it. This takes anything you've heard about in the NFL, in professional sports or whatever else, and takes it to a point of, look, this is the mentality you have to have if you want to operate at that level of lethalness as well as responsibility under the rules of engagement that we have right now with our men and women in the military. And that's why I'm very proud to have had Ryan's book and the responsibility of doing it, because I think it really tells people what it is that our men and women are going through and what it is we're looking for the men and women that do the toughest jobs for this country. And that's what American Commander is.
That sounds like a terribly exciting book. Really looking forward to that coming up at the end of November. Be sure to look for that, American Commander. Scott, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. And if you want to look at any of that stuff, scottmcewen.com.
All right, great. And speaking of which, head to iSpyRadio.com. We'll have links to not only Scott's website, but his books, William Gein's site, their demonstrations that they're putting on, and we'll have that Michael Moore video up as well. Be aware that it does have some rather salty language in it, but it is really worth it all the same. While you're there, be sure to visit our advertisers. Clicking on their ads there on our website takes all of about a few seconds, and it really does actually help support us. Think of it as hitting the tip jar. In fact, you ought to be doing that on every conservative website that you visit. Do be sure to like and share our page because, as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.